And now, this tribute to the periodic table, all 118 elements of you. You are magical and continue to amaze us. So a new three-part series from Nova explores the marvels of chemistry. It's called Beyond the Elements, starring Molecules and Reactions. It's a follow-up to Hunting the Elements, which came out in 2012. Are you a chemist by chance? What do you love about your profession? Have you watched the new Nova series? What do you think? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. David Pogue is a science and technology writer, host of Beyond the Elements. He's also author of the new book, How to Prepare for Climate Change. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much.
Why is chemistry so darn cool?
That's the thing. It wasn't until Nova came along that I realized just how cool it was. I've now hosted 20 one-hour specials for Nova over the last 10 years on the same sort of formula, which is to throw me, a non-scientist, into the deep end with actual scientists. And, you know, they try to illustrate the science as telegenically as possible, usually involving trying to kill me. They had me swim with sharks and pour molten gold and go hang gliding and sit in the backseat of a demolition derby car, which is the one I really regret. But anyway, to try to make the points they're trying to make. And for some reason, it's caught on with viewers. They always get good ratings, although I can imagine most people who are uninitiated would say, you know, 3 hours about the elements of the periodic table, you've got to be kidding.
I'm sure your insurance writer is pretty interesting. But here's the deal. You know, chemistry is vast. There are more than 176 million organic and inorganic substances, 132 million reactions in the Chemical Abstracts Service Registry. How did you choose what to focus on?
You read the Abstract Service Registry. Nicely done, Kate.
Well, public radio. What would you expect, David Pogue? Come on.
That's what you call preparation. this guy Dan McCabe is the writer, editor, director, producer, conceiver of the show. And, you know, we did Hunting the Elements together in 2012, and the topic of that was the periodic table. So at least we only had 119 topics to choose from. But molecules and reactions, I mean, that's endless. That's infinite. So he had to carefully choose the topic. So the show, which, by the way, to our tremendous credit of timing, we've now completely missed. It's done airing. but I should say that Beyond the Elements is fortunately available to stream for free on the Nova website. So that one focuses on three categories. There's three one-hour shows, one about reactions, one about it's called Indestructible. It's about materials, especially materials like glass, rubber, and plastic that we can make last forever. And then the third one is Life, which explores how chemistry led to biology. And again, these all sound like really singing, dancing topics, just as much as the periodic table. But somehow, you know, McCabe comes up with ways to make them really come to life and illustrate them really beautifully.
Well, I want to talk about hot peppers because I want to know how you feel about hot peppers. But first, let's hear a clip of you.
Let's turn up the heat.
And we're off.
Zesty, with just a hint of poison.
Round two, we're going to start with the red Fresno pepper.
Got to be some easier way to learn about molecules.
All right, are we ready?
That was not designed for human consumption.
So what are you trying to convey here through eating hot peppers?
How dedicated I am to my craft. So this is a classic example of how Nova tries to torture me in order to make a scientific point. They had me enter a chili pepper eating contest in Pennsylvania at a county fair. And, you know, I thought I was this super hot, studly, brave guy. I was out after five of the 10 increasingly hot peppers. I was the first one out. I lost to children. but actually, it was a really cool segment. So chili peppers get their heat from this long, complicated molecule called capsaicin that the plant designed to not be eaten. It was a survival technique. We are covered, not just our tongues, but our entire bodies with these sensors in our skin. This heat sensor, that's the sensor that makes you go, ow, when you touch something hot. And it's triggered when it comes in contact with anything that's over 107 degrees Fahrenheit. So obviously when you eat something spicy, it's not necessarily that hot or you would get actual burns. So what capsaicin does is it lowers the activation temperature of that sensor to 98.6 body temperature. So it actually feels like it's burning, but it's not burning. You won't see scars. Mm-hmm. You don't suffer any physical damage. It's just tricking your brain in a really sneaky way.
Well, what is the deal with bonding to milk then when you chug some milk?
Ah, well, milk or butter or anything with fat in it, the fat molecules bond to the capsaicin molecules and pulls the capsaicin away from your flesh. So the idea there is just get it away from you and have it bond and swallow it. But the amazing thing, I think, to me is that this plant developed this chemical in order to survive. And so what's happened? We now cultivate it by the fields full. I mean, it's survived fantastically.
Science writer David Pogue, host of Nova's new series, Beyond the Elements. What do you want to know about the chemical reaction in your mouth in eating a hot pepper? What are your favorite reactions gone right or wrong in chemistry? 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. So now the central science is getting its day in the sun. We're appreciating what chemistry is to our world, exploring this 3-hour doc series from Nova called Beyond the Elements. It focuses on different chemical themes. We've been talking about reactions. There's indestructible, which we're going to be talking about here, and not to plastics at all. And the last one is called life. That's big topic there. What's your favorite periodic element and why? Rubber, plastic, glass? What do you want to know about the qualities of these materials? 800-642-1234. Conversation right here. 800-642-1234. We have science writer David Pogue, who's host of Beyond the Elements, and he stays with us. So, David, moving on to the next piece of this doc, Indestructible, and looking at the amazing thing called glass. What makes glass stronger than others? How do you make glass?
Oh, this is really cool. We went to Corning, which is, of course, this huge global glass maker in Corning, New York. We took the Corning airline up to the Corning campus and went into the Corning building and met with Corning scientists. Regular glass, like window glass, is made of, you know, everyone says, oh, it's made of sand. Well, sort of. It's made of silica sand plus soda ash, which makes the melting point of the silica drop to a more reasonable temperature, and then crushed limestone. And that just gives you clear glass. It's sort of this, like water when you freeze it, it crystallizes and then uncrystallizes when it's melted. But glass doesn't uncrystallize. When it's heated and then cooled, it turns into this sort of amorphous solid, they call it. But what they do at Corning, which is so cool, they spend all day long trying different additives, temperatures, times in the oven to see if they can make glass do new things. Like Gorilla Glass on every smartphone was a Corning invention. And that's just, you know, they figured out new ways to heat it and cool it to make it much stronger. The latest iPhones, they've started adding ceramic crystals that makes the glass 4 times stronger. So when you drop it, it's less likely to break. It's kind of a cool job and kind of scattershot. You know, like they just have all these ovens in a huge room with people in heat protective suits trying, you know, combination 23A7.
No, these aren't just people, David. These are chemists who are just having a blast. They're like in their sandbox, in their element.
That's true. Although most studies show that most chemists are, in fact, people.
Well, let's take a look here at rubber, because you did some looking at rubber, and specifically with race car driver Mario Andretti. What did you find about rubber?
That without it, I would be dead. this Mario Andretti on the Indianapolis 500 racetrack has the specially modified two-seater race car. It's you sit right behind him, and for the proper amount of money, he will take you for a 200-mile-an-hour ride around the Indy 500 track. And when you're on the straightaway, you just say, wow, this is a fast car. But when it goes around the curves, you're feeling 5 G's, five times the force of gravity, sideways. And you feel like the car should just be flung by centrifugal force right into the wall and die. And it's these highly complex formulations of rubber in those tires that grip the road at that speed. And so we went to Bridgestone Firestone and, of course, looked into how they make rubber. Used to be we'd get this white milky juice from the rubber trees called latex. Nowadays, there's a lot of synthetics and additives. And of course, the big breakthrough was vulcanization when they discovered that if you add sulfur to the rubber and then bake it, the long rubber molecules bond sideways to each other. They kind of cross-link and makes the rubber really, really tough and retains its shape. So all our tires now are vulcanized, and I'm here and alive to say it.
Certainly, there's a lot of trial and error here, too, in chemistry. I mean, that's really trying to figure out how to get to that goal.
Yeah, that's right. The Bridgestone Firestone lab reminded me a lot of the Corning lab, in that chemists, people, spend a lot of time trying different combinations and formulations to see what they can come up with. There's just this one lab where there's just row upon row of additive chemicals that they can experiment with to make rubber do what they want it to do.
We have science writer David Pogue, who hosts Beyond the Elements. He's hosted several other NOVA programs on molecules, periodic table, material science, all that good stuff. Do you have a gift for explaining complex topics in chemistry? Was organic chemistry your favorite class? OChem people, you love it. You know it. 800-642-1234. We'll be back. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. So now, protons, neutrons, electrons, all the matter is something to behold. And the marvels of chemistry and chemical reactions on display in the three-part doc series from NOVA called Beyond the Elements. We're talking about it. It's about basic science literacy. We're looking behind the scenes with its host, David Pogue. Have you watched NOVA's series? What questions do you have about it? How does chemistry come into play in your life or your lab? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Science writer David Pogue is our guide to chemistry. David, let's talk plastic, which is also a huge problem in our world. Plastics are just permeating. They're everywhere. What did you learn about the chemical composition of hard plastics?
Oh, I thought you wanted people to listen and contribute to WPR, not make them depressed. plastics, you know, there was life before plastics. I mean, plastic was developed in the 50s. Can you imagine there was life in America and around the world before anything was made of plastic? It's just amazing to me. My parents grew up without plastic. So we figured out how to make this amazing material. We can dial up any quality we want, make it clear or colored or soft or hard or bouncy, whatever. We just never figured out what to do with it when we're done with it. So we have manufactured 8.3 billion tons of plastic since the beginning. That's, for those of you scoring at home, that's 55 million jumbo jets worth of weight, or 56,000 aircraft carriers. Thank you, Wikipedia. And still, we have no good way to get rid of it. Only 9% of it is ever recycled, 9%, no matter how hard we try. And a lot of the rest of it is going into the oceans, where it finds its way into sea life and our water supply. So at this point, there's tiny fragments of plastic in your drinking water. It's in your table salt. It's in your food. It's a serious problem. So, I mean, it's not a problem that nobody has noticed. Chemists are working really hard to develop, for example, these so-called PHA plastics.
Yeah, what are the PHA plastics?
Yeah, so it turns out that bacteria make this petroleum-like stuff that we can make into plastic, but it's entirely natural and entirely biodegradable. So this stuff we can make into plastic, and then when we're done with it, we throw it away, and it just breaks down, even in the sea. At this point, the only problem is cost. It's more expensive than the super cheap plastic we use. So as soon as they can get the cost down, as soon as people care enough, then that petroleum problem can start to go away.
Well, let's look at the third piece of this doc, which is titled, one word, life. Why did you want to focus on all of biology when you're looking at chemistry?
Well, it's interesting. It turns out that chemistry kind of led to biology, and it goes way back. One of the marvels of biology is the way DNA controls the development of an organism, the way it makes cells divide and rebuild just the right way. But when the world was nothing but a hot soup of ocean, there was no DNA. How did cells start dividing before there was DNA to tell them how to do it? And so I interviewed Jack Szostak and a couple other Nobel Prize winners for the show who've tried to research this. And like, I'm sure this is the world's worst topic to try to describe over the radio, but it has to do with soap. Soap molecules, it turns out, can divide like cells, even though they don't have DNA. And so there's been a lot of studying into how they do that. And they've been able to recreate this in the lab. So we think it has something to do with the way soap molecules subdivide.
And we're doing a lot with soap these days in the pandemic, washing our hands a lot more. How does soap work on a molecular level?
Oh, boy. Okay. So if you could zoom way, way. Yeah. If you could zoom way, way in, you would see that a soap molecule is, let's say it's like a tiny pencil. There's an eraser end and there's a pointy end. And basically, the eraser end bonds with water molecules and the pointy end bonds with oil molecules. So when you wash your hands, the pointy ends are grabbing the oily molecules off your hands, and the eraser end is sticking to the water that's running over your hands and whisks the whole thing away. How is that?
That's great. I can see it. I can see it even. Okay. Another thing that you got into pretty deeply is photosynthesis. And, you know, you kind of give a bad rap because it's horribly inefficient. What is going on with photosynthesis?
Oh, man, photosynthesis, really, you can do better, man. photosynthesis relies on this enzyme, and I love it. In the show, the scientist is telling me it's called Rubisco, and spontaneously, she and I both simultaneously go, Rubisco.
Let's hear a clip.
It's RUBP, or ribulose bisphosphate carboxylase oxygenase.
And it's, for most plant biologists, one of our favorite enzymes on the planet.
Yeah, Rubisco is our shortened term for it.
Mainly because it's fun to say.
Well, it's super fun to
Rubisco.
Say. Of course, Rubisco. But it's also a really cool enzyme because it makes life on Earth possible.
Oh, all right. Take it away.
Okay, let's talk enzymes. So this enzyme, we know that plants breathe in carbon dioxide, right? This is why we breathe out carbon dioxide, they breathe it in, convert it back to oxygen. So this is the enzyme that grabs carbon dioxide molecules from the air to feed the plant. But Rubisco is, you know, not an A-plus student. Every fifth molecule it grabs from the air is actually an oxygen molecule by mistake, they've discovered. Hmm. It's a huge waste of energy and time for the plant. And all of our plants, all of our crops are therefore using all this energy to deal with that mistake rather than growing corn or wheat or whatever we're eating. So these ingenious scientists at the University of Illinois are trying to breed plants that are more efficient at this process. If a plant could be, 20% more efficient, that means 20% more crops for us. And they have an eye on 2050 when the Earth's population is supposed to approach 9.7 billion people. Where are we going to grow the food for these people? I mean, if we just rely on more fields, more fertilizer, we're not going to make it. I mean, people will starve.
Well, take the plant's position here. We've been doing this photosynthesis thing for a long time. Don't mess with our ways. We're messing with their ways.
There are definitely some plants in therapy over this, being told they've been doing it wrong for billions of years. Yeah, I mean, the trick here is that this is genetic engineering, which makes a lot of people oogie. You know, it turns out in this country, we've been eating genetically engineered crops for decades. I mean, every ear of corn, every bean you eat has been genetically engineered. But in the countries that need it most, the poorer countries that are desperate for food, there's a real stigma about genetically modified foods. So something's going to have to give. Either they're going to starve or they'll have to get used to genetic engineering.
We're talking with David Pogue, longtime science and technology writer, host of NOVA's new series, Beyond the Elements. We heard from Carl, called in from Oconomowoc, couldn't stay with us. And Carl wants to know, David, why does water expand when it freezes?
Why does water expand when it freezes? I don't know. I mean, keep in mind that the reason they hired me is to be the audience's know-nothing stand-in to interview the scientists. I could probably Google it up, but so could John.
All right, so we're going to move on to this acronym, CHNOPS. Sounds like schnapps. What's going on there?
Yeah, these are the prominent elements that make up our body. It's carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and sulfur. And so one of the things that writer, editor, producer, director Dan McCabe one of the things he's so good at doing is bringing these abstract concepts to life. So in one of these sequences, we went shopping in a grocery store to buy the ingredients that contain the equivalent amount of carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and so on. We went on a schnapping spree, if you will.
What did you find?
Well, I was surprised about the phosphorus. In the original show, Hunting the Elements, we were tasked with illustrating how your pee is filled with phosphorus that we are excreting out. And yes, we wound up having me go into a men's room with a cameraman and illustrate the principle, and it made national TV. So we are willing to go there.
Well, you know, as you do all of these experiments and look more deeply at chemistry, where do you see the triumph of science in the COVID pandemic? What are the milestones that scientists are making now?
It's interesting because the two vaccines that we're using now are both based on RNA, which is sort of the director of the show when it comes to DNA and how it operates. And RNA is exactly what we suspect was involved with the origins of life when the oceans were a hot, bubbly chemical soup. So there is something in common. And RNA is also involved in the so-called CRISPR technology. This is the new gene editing technology that has the prospect of letting us edit out diseases, either in individuals or from the human race. I mean, there is prospect of editing out muscular dystrophy and Huntington's disease and sickle cell to eliminate them completely using this CRISPR technology, in which we harness RNA's ability to be the chef to do our bidding. So really, we're on the precipice. We're on the dawn of a new era where, if we do it carefully and with ethical considerations, we can literally redesign plants, animals, and ourselves to make things healthier and better.
Sounds like a new NOVA series.
Where do I sign?
David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
David Pogue is a longtime science writer, host of Nova's new series, Beyond the Elements, on PBS. We got a link, by the way, to the series on our website, WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.